You're listening to episode 101 of Flick Fights, the official podcast of FlickChart.com. Not all remakes are bad. Sometimes they can even be great. Take John Carpenter's The Thing from 1982. Now widely celebrated as a cult sci-fi horror classic, remade from Howard Hawks' 1951 film, The Thing from Another World. Or take David Cronenberg's grotesque body horror modernization of 1958's The Fly, which cemented Jeff Goldblum as scientist Seth Brundle. Well, this will hopefully be yet another welcome remake, reboot, or reimagining. Hello, Flick Charters, and welcome to Flick Fights, the official podcast of FlickChart.com. I'm your host, Nathan Chase, and I'm also a co-founder and the designer of FlickChart. Along with me are two longtime podcasters who I've known for many, many years and share a rich history with, going back to our days podcasting together on Lost Chatter, where we unraveled the theories about the hatch or tried desperately to decipher the numbers, and we're still waiting for the answers to the unresolved questions that will never come. The first of these two gentlemen is Mr. Lou Secchi. Welcome to the program, Lou.
Hey, thanks, Nathan. Glad to be here.
And a man who should need no introduction, but will receive one anyway, Mr. Eric Blythe.
Hey, how's it going?
Going great. Thanks for getting on the show, guys.
The pleasure is all mine.
I also want to give significant credit where it's due and pay respects and homage to the originators of this show, Mr. Travis Betts and Devin Barry, who together performed 65 episodes of Flick Fights from 2009 to 2012. We wouldn't be here without the road that they paved. So many, many thanks to them for a great run with this show. And for those of you that are past listeners of Flick Fights, we're going to keep our format much the same. We'll be getting right into some movie matchups, followed by a review and addition of a single film to our chart. And when we have a guest available, we'll have an interview with that special guest in the back half of the show. And for this episode, in lieu of a guest interview, we'll spend some time introducing ourselves and talking a little bit more about FlickChart itself for those that might be uninitiated to the site, and get everyone squared away with how to subscribe and make sure to catch up on all our future episodes. But for now, let's get right into the Thunderdome.
Two men, hand to hand. No jury, no appeal, no parole. Two men enter, one man leaves.
Weapons?
Anything is possible. Chance decides.
Thunderdome. How do I get in there?
That's easy. Pick a fight.
And to start us off, we've got The Incredible Hulk from 2008 versus Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. What do you guys think about this matchup?
That's, wow, that's a pretty good one. Now, this Incredible Hulk is the one with Edward Norton, correct?
That's correct, yes.
I rather enjoyed that one, but I also liked Order of the Phoenix. I get some of the Harry Potter movies confused because I binge-watched a lot of them. I may have to go with the Hulk on this one, though. I think it's... Maybe it's just because I'm so enamored with a lot of the comic book films right now. I felt like at the time this was the first Hulk movie where we really got a good performance as Bruce Banner. You actually sympathized with the character a little bit. And to me, a lot of the Harry Potter movies are more of the same. There are a couple of them maybe that stood out, but I don't know that Order of the Phoenix was necessarily one of them.
Same category. I tend to really confuse a lot of the Harry Potter movies. I didn't read any of the books, so to me, it's like, well, one rolls into the other, rolls into the next one. And nothing really separates them. So I have a hard time, even on my own chart, doing these kind of movies. Whereas this Hulk movie, I didn't really enjoy because I like Edward Norton. I think he's a great actor. I tend to like things he does. So I would tend to put this a little higher than the Harry Potter.
Okay, great. Yeah, I would agree with you guys. I think that Order of the Phoenix is probably one of the most forgettable of the Harry Potter movies. Azkaban is probably the best of the whole series.
Yeah.
And the one that really sticks out. And Incredible Hulk, while it wasn't great, had a couple good moments and had some good acting and was arguably better than Ang Lee's Hulk. So we'll go ahead and give Incredible Hulk the win over Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. So next up, we've got more Harry Potter, actually. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 versus Charlie's Angels. And that's the one with Drew Barrymore, Lucy Liu, and Cameron Diaz from 2000.
I have to admit, I did not see this version of Charlie's Angels.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I did see it. And let's see. This is a tough one. It's been a while since I've seen Charlie's Angels. So, you know, Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 1 is more recent in my memory. I would tend to say, God, boy, as much as I like Charlie's Angels and it was fun to kind of relive the 80s in a current movie, I would have to say I'd go for Harry Potter in this case because, you know, it was beginning of the end for the franchise. Things were ramping up. It was a lot of action. It was, you know, I wasn't looking for answers to the book because I never read them. I wasn't really looking for the in details that the book would give you. But I would have to say, yeah, Harry Potter is going to take this one just because, I guess just because it's more recent in my mind. I've seen it more recently than I have Charlie's Angels.
I would say Charlie's Angels has some good things going for it. It's got Crispin Glover, who is more famous for his role as Marty McFly's dad in Back to the Future. He plays a great bad guy in Charlie's Angels. Also has a great Bill Murray role. And there's quite a bit of really good action and stuff in Charlie's Angels. So it's no slouch, I think.
Oh, definitely not. One of the things about Charlie's Angels that's kind of bothering me in my mind right now in this matchup is that it didn't do anything to make it really memorable in my mind, you know, for the long haul. I mean, it's been, it came out in 2000, so we're talking 16 years or 15 plus years. And nothing to me is saying, yes, this is what it was. You know, this is why it's memorable, why I want to put it in my chart as a very high ranked movie. Yeah, I just don't have any fond recollections of it, I guess.
Right. Okay, let's see. I guess if I really had to pick one, I probably would put Harry Potter above Charlie's Angels. Although I wasn't really super happy with the way the story panned out, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's also hard to rank a movie that's half of the story, too. I've always had that problem where, you know, it's part one of a two-part movie. Do you really give part one credit for everything because it's being wrapped up in part two?
Right.
So I could be swayed in that case. I mean, I do remember Charlie's Angels was a fun movie to watch when it was out in the theaters. I never saw it more than once. I don't even think I saw it on video. Maybe I saw it on TV once, I guess. Boy, I don't know. I could go either way with this one, anything. If you were really strongly saying, well, you know, let's give it to Charlie's Angels because it had some good stuff going for it. Crispin Glover is a great actor. It was nice. They had a great cast. I mean, Cameron Diaz did a great job with her role, being that kind of, how would you say? She was kind of maybe acting childish, I guess, in the role. It was a lot of fun for that aspect
of it. Right. I
know I'm flip-flopping here, but
yeah.
I can go Charlie's Angels on this just because of that aspect, remembering, you know, bringing it back into my mind, I guess, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. We'll go with Charlie's Angels for now. It can always move around as Flick Chart does. So Charlie's Angels beats Deathly Hallows Part 1. All right, here we go. Total Recall versus Back to the Future Part 2.
The Total Recall that we all remember from
the good one. Yes.
Yeah.
The second one was not that bad. I think the second one got a bum rap. But yeah, we're talking the one from 1990 with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Correct.
Versus the second Back to the Future film.
It's really hard to beat Back to the Future here.
Back to the Future is one of those movies where it is part of the story, so it's not the whole story. Two and three to me kind of go together hand in hand. But yeah, when you come right down to it, Back to the Future is going to take a lot of things out. Even numbers two and three. The first one obviously is my favorite, but
yeah.
Two set up very nicely to come back and do the sequels. Sometimes a sophomore movie kind of flops when it comes out and doesn't do as well as the first one. But this one picked up right where it left off and did a great job.
You know, to Total Recall's credit, though, for the time period in which it came out, it had a more complex science fiction plot line than a lot of other similar films did. It was more than just an action film. It had kind of, you walked away from the end of it not really knowing if the whole thing was just his experience from the Total Recall system or whether it was something that actually happened to him. It kind of made you think a little bit, and it made you go back and reanalyze the film, which is something that a lot of films didn't make you do, especially back then, and especially not science fiction and or a Schwarzenegger action film. This is tough, because for that reason alone, I kind of want to lean more toward Total Recall, whereas Back to the Future Part 2 was a lot of fun. It didn't have the classic, timelessness, no pun intended, of the first one. And I think the third one I liked the least of the series, but I know I'm in the minority. I would probably say Total Recall.
Paul Verhoeven definitely had sort of a trifecta between RoboCop, Total Recall, and Starship Troopers. He did that, the same kind of thing, where it was subversive and it was violent and it was a science fiction film, but it also made you think and gave you something to take away when you were done watching it.
Exactly.
Right. And Total Recall is based on a Philip K. Dick story.
Right.
We can remember for you, Wholesale.
Which was phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah. So it does have that going for it, but
the kid in me can't not choose Back to the Future.
I know. No hoverboard, no self-lacing shoes in Total Recall.
Yeah. I've got to stick with Nathan on this. Back to the Future Part 2 is definitely going to take it from me in this one.
All right. So Back to the Future Part 2 wins over Total Recall. And next up is The Ninth Gate versus Reservoir Dogs.
Finally, an easy one.
You guys both seen The Ninth Gate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have actually not seen The Ninth Gate, I don't think. That's a Johnny Depp horror thriller, I think.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, but it also was not memorable. Whereas Reservoir Dogs, I think, was extremely memorable, especially, it being an early Tarantino film. It still holds up well today. I think Reservoir Dogs has got to take it.
Yeah.
All right. Definitely.
We'll go ahead and push on with Reservoir Dogs winning that matchup. Okay, let's go to Cars versus Speed.
Ha! Interesting matchup. Cars is probably one of my least favorite animated movies.
Not even just Pixar movies, but animated movies in general, huh?
Of the Pixar bunch, definitely one of the lower ones. But yeah, in general, I never really got the appeal of the talking cars. It was fun. It's a neat concept, I guess, but it just didn't work as well as some of the other stuff they've done.
I like the story, but to me, it always felt like a Doc Hollywood ripoff. I really liked Doc Hollywood more so than I think a lot of people did. But so I can't watch Cars and not long for the old, Michael J. Fox film.
And Speed is kind of like Die Hard on a bus, right?
Right. So, right. Yeah. And back in the day, it was a great movie. I don't think it holds up really well now.
Right.
But yeah, it was a big blockbuster back in the day. I would say I'd have to pick Speed.
It kind of made Sandra Bullock's career, right?
Right.
And, yeah. True.
Dennis Hopper had a great bad guy role in that movie.
Well, and I think it helped establish Keanu Reeves a little further, too.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let's go with Speed then over Cars. All right, we've got 10 movies on the list. Let's keep going. We got The Simpsons Movie versus Fargo.
Okay, I did not see The Simpsons Movie.
You didn't miss much.
Yeah, I did see it. I've always been kind of an amateur Simpsons fan. I enjoy the show. I don't go out of my way to watch it, but I do enjoy it. I thought the movie was a Simpsons episode that was stretched out way too long. Mm-hmm. Whereas Fargo, I thought the pacing was a little slow at times, but I enjoyed the movie a lot better. It was definitely a better, the craftsmanship of the film, if nothing else, easily makes it the winner here, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You good with that, Lou?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed Fargo, so I would say yes. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Let's keep going. All right, we've got Rush Hour versus Van Helsing.
Hey, believe it or not, I've never seen Rush Hour.
I've never seen Van Helsing.
Okay. Oh, no. Yeah, you didn't miss much there.
I so wanted an opportunity to tear apart Van Helsing.
So, yeah, Eric, if you want to.
I'll say Rush Hour easily. It was a much more fun movie. There's so much that you can get out of Rush Hour, in my opinion, compared to Van Helsing. Though, to be fair, I think that there's a lot more that you could get out of watching paint dry than what. I think Van Helsing was just a travesty of a film, whereas Rush Hour still to this day, when it came out in 98, so, you know, 15 years later, is still a film that I'll sit down and watch if there's nothing else on, just to have fun.
Okay, great. So we'll do Rush Hour then as the winner.
Okay.
Moving on, we've got The Shining versus Hellboy.
Huh. Well, two movies that are pretty good in my opinion. Gosh, I would have to give this to The Shining. The Shining is just a classic.
They're good, but I don't think they're on the same caliber.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed both movies, but I mean, The Shining is just an amazing movie. You know, Jack Nicholson does such a great job in that role.
Well, and you've got Kubrick versus, who was it, Del Toro?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would rather watch Hellboy again, but The Shining, I think, was by far a better quality film.
Well, one's a classic and one's just a really good movie. Right. You know, it's kind of that.
There's a lot more going on in The Shining.
Oh, easily.
Right.
All right. The Shining will take it. And now we've got Zoolander versus Being John Malkovich.
Okay, I never saw Zoolander.
All right, Nathan, have you seen both of them?
I have seen both of them, yes.
What are your thoughts?
I would easily take Being John Malkovich here. I think it's an incredible, unique vision of a movie, and John Cusack is just phenomenal in it. It's such a crazy story and such a well-realized movie in the way that they were trying to tell this just absurd story. A Zoolander, I could take it or leave it. The one scene that I like in Zoolander is when David Duchovny is the hand model, and there's the scene between him and Ben Stiller that is good. But I'm not a big Owen Wilson fan, and it's a comedy that doesn't work that well for me personally. So I would easily take Being John Malkovich here.
Yeah, you know, I really didn't enjoy Being John Malkovich that much, but by far a better film. Easily. Zoolander, to me, I get what they were trying to do with it, but so much of it fell flat. Ben Stiller is a very hit or miss comedian. Either you like him in a role or you hate him. He's had so many that I love him in, but he's also had just as many where I can't stand him. And this is one I couldn't stand.
Yep. All right. Being John Malkovich wins. All right. We've got American Pie versus As Good As It Gets.
For me, this is one of those situations where I always have to sit and think a moment about how I want to make the decision, because to me, one was a more enjoyable movie, one was a better crafted movie. And so do I want to pick the one that I like or the one that I respect.
Right.
As Good as It Gets, I thought, is a very good film. But I enjoyed American Pie a lot better. I mean, it's definitely not my favorite of that style of comedy, but I thought it was good. But for me, I'm really on the fence on this one.
American Pie is one of the few comedies that I can point to that's relatively modern that I thought hit all the right notes that it was supposed to. Like, to me, you should always evaluate a movie based on how well it achieves what it meant, what it went out to try to accomplish as a film. Mm-hmm. And I think American Pie really tapped into something when it came out. It had the right cast, it had the right chemistry between them. Yeah. It had a really great script, and you know, it had the right soundtrack. I mean, just everything, all wheels were moving on that movie.
Well, and that's really hard to do with a comedy sometimes too.
It can be, yeah. And that was one of the first movies, I think, of its kind that came out. I think it was Nathan said a modern, you know, comedy. There's a lot of funny teen movies over the years, but this one kind of set that new standard moving into the next generation, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would put movies like Clueless or Heathers, or maybe going as far back as Fast Times at Ridgemont High, into the same sort of category of teen comedies that were really successful.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And As Good as It Gets is good. Helen Hunt is great, and Jack Nicholson is great. But I don't remember as much of that movie. Like there's not as much takeaway from it, I guess.
It's not as much a part of me as American Pie is, you know, it sticks with you longer.
Yeah. All right, cool. So we'll go with American Pie over As Good as It Gets. And now we've got 20 movies in our chart. So now I think we'll go ahead and try to add a movie that we've seen recently and see how it shakes down against the movies that we've added to the chart so far.
Which one is it?
You must choose, but choose wisely. For as the true grail will bring you life, the false grail will take it from you.
So we're going to add Zootopia, which is the movie most recently put out by Disney, and it's from the same group of animators that did Frozen, and we're going to see how it goes against the movies that we've got on our chart. So the first movie that it's up against is As Good as It Gets.
You know, adding movies for me is kind of tough, especially when it's a new movie that I've recently seen, because I always want to rank it higher than I think it should be. And I'm always trying to hold back a little bit. But in this case, I mean, I really enjoyed Zootopia. I thought it had a great message. I thought the animation was just amazing. The character moments, you know, the comedy, everything, it hit all the right points for me as an adult watching this movie, even though it was a kid's movie. I've got to rank it higher than
As Good as It Gets.
As Good as It Gets. Yep.
Yeah. I agree, Nathan, with what you said a minute ago. As Good as It Gets, it was good, but it didn't have as many memorable moments. I do remember a few specific moments from that film. But for me, Zootopia just did everything almost perfectly. It hit every, like what you were saying before with American Pie, everything Zootopia set out to try to do, I feel like it succeeded at. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with that. I was genuinely surprised by how good Zootopia was.
Yeah.
It was able to subvert, expectations and, convey a message without seeming preachy. Like a lot of people seem to have that issue with, say, WALL-E, where they saw through the veneer of the movie and saw directly through to the message that was underneath. Whereas Zootopia, I think, is able to tell its message without seeming to have a agenda to push onto the audience.
Right. The message is obvious, but it never feels like it's being crammed down your throat.
Right.
Right. Okay, so let's put Zootopia up against the next movie. Let's put it up against Fargo. Coen Brothers versus a bunny.
I feel like I'm going to be very unpopular with people when I say this. Again, I would still say Zootopia. My big issue with Fargo was the pacing of the film. It moved a lot slower than I would have liked, and I enjoyed the film. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to diss it, but again, all things being equal, comparing Zootopia to Fargo, I felt like for all the good points, that was one significant down mm-hmm. point that Fargo had, and Zootopia just didn't have that. I felt like Zootopia, the pacing was much better. The story moved along at a good clip, and I never really spent much time looking at my watch or wondering when they're going to move along to the next scene.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the pacing in Fargo, although it didn't bother me watching Fargo. I almost want to side land on the side of Fargo for this one, because I really enjoyed Fargo when I saw it in the theaters. I thought the direction was great. I thought they got great performances out of the actors. I thought just the dialogue in that North Dakota accent made the movie so enjoyable and believable for me. Mm-hmm. It felt realistic. I felt like I wasn't watching a movie. I was watching a documentary almost,
maybe,
you know?
Maybe for me, I lived not in Fargo. I lived just outside of Fargo for a while. So the whole North Dakota accent thing, which I do have to say, they nailed that accent. It's spot on.
I mean, I don't know if it's a reason to make it a better movie, but you know, I really did enjoy it for that fact, and I thought it was a well done movie.
I think the acting in particular in Fargo is truly awesome. Like the William H. Macy's character is just unhinged in all the right ways. Frances McDormand playing the pregnant cop who is just a little bit better as a cop than she should be for where she's at in her career and everything. It's just there's so many interesting little things going on in Fargo. Like she meets her old boyfriend from school and has this awkward encounter in the restaurant. There's little tiny bits of humor and unusual stuff going on in Fargo that makes it memorable for me. And I don't really necessarily like everything the Coen brothers have put out, but Fargo has definitely got to be one of the best ones that, in my opinion, that they've ever done. So I would have to go with Fargo over Zootopia.
So it looks like we've got two for Fargo and one for Zootopia.
Yeah. So let's go on then. Okay. So now we've got Zootopia versus The Shining.
Ooh. Now, I imagine that over time, The Shining will float higher to the top of our rankings overall. For me personally, looking at the entire list, this is one of only two films on this list that I would consider putting over Zootopia.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible for me to see The Shining losing against a Disney animated film.
Right.
I can't even think of another Disney animated film that The Shining would lose to other than Zootopia. There's just so much more underneath what The Shining is got going on.
Yeah, I think Eric's right. The Shining will move up in our chart as we progress, but there's no way Zootopia can beat The Shining right now.
If any animated film could do it, I would see Zootopia would be the closest, but
interesting. Okay. So we've got Zootopia versus Being John Malkovich.
Oh, Lou, you said you haven't seen Being John Malkovich, right?
No, I've seen Being John Malkovich. I didn't see what it was up against at the time. I would have to say, I'd have to go with Zootopia on this one. I enjoyed Being John Malkovich. I think Nathan was right when he talked about it originally, that it was inventive and different and kind of quirky and everything. But I, as much as I enjoyed seeing it, I'd probably rather see Zootopia again before I saw Being John Malkovich. So on that basis, I'd have to give it to Zootopia.
I always feel like I'm one of the few people that really, really dug Being John Malkovich when I talk to other film folks about it. For whatever reason, it's fallen under the radar, I think, for most people that they saw it maybe once. They rented it at Blockbuster and they forgot about it. You know, they haven't seen it since.
Right. I agree with you, Nathan, that you're probably one of the few people who feels that way. when I see Being John Malkovich, I feel like I'm looking at a painting by a master. And I feel like that's art beyond just a movie, beyond just being a film. It's truly art. And I get that it's art and I respect that it's art, but I don't necessarily want to buy it and go put it in my house.
Sure.
For me, I have to give it to Zootopia. Being John Malkovich is a very artful film. Again, it was masterfully crafted. And it's one of those things where I kind of feel like I don't get it. I do get it, but I just don't. It doesn't click with me.
All right. Okay, well, we'll let that slide for now. And now it's at number 9 on our chart. So it ended up being right, pretty much right in the middle of our chart, okay, based on the movies that we've got on there so far. Now, as some of the listeners might know, whenever you're starting off on a brand new account on Flickchart, you're going to have some ramp up, obviously, to get the movies in order. So while our top 20 is nowhere near where it should be in representation of Lou, Eric, and myself in terms of our tastes in film, the current rankings are The Incredible Hulk at number 1, Charlie's Angels at number 2, Back to the Future Part 2 at number 3, Reservoir Dogs at number 4, Speed number 5, and on the way down the list, we've got Fargo, Rush Hour, The Shining, Zootopia in at number 9, Being John Malkovich, American Pie, As Good as It Gets, Zoolander, Hellboy, Van Helsing, The Simpsons Movie, Cars, The Ninth Gate, Total Recall, and Harry Potter or something. One of the Harry Potters.
Order of the Phoenix.
Okay. So, you know, like I said, we've got time to make that a better chart. But yeah, interesting matchups so far. And what I'd like to do now is to just talk a little bit about ourselves, introduce ourselves to the listeners who are not familiar with who Eric Blythe and Louis Secchi and Nathan Chase are. So, Eric, tell us a little bit about your background in podcasting. I know that you were one of the original or close to original members of the Force Cast podcast, which is one of the biggest Star Wars podcasts.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. I was introduced to podcasting back in 2005. I was watching Battlestar Galactica, and I noticed that Ron Moore was doing a podcast, and I didn't even know what that was at the time. And I thought, well, wait a minute, what's going on with that? So I took a look at it, and it turns out that it was basically an audio commentary that he was doing along with the television episodes. And I thought, well, that's brilliant. And he's distributing it through RSS, which was how I was getting a lot of my website news anyway. So I started to look into this and I thought, well, you know what? I'm kind of working in the audio industry a little bit. I've got some equipment. I could probably make something similar to that on my own. And I had randomchatter.com as a blog where I was talking about entertainment stuff anyway. So I did maybe 2 or 3 episodes, and in hindsight, they were atrocious. But at the time, they were okay, considering that a lot of the tools that podcasters have now, both hardware-wise and software-wise, didn't exist back then. It wasn't too bad. So I contacted theforce.net, which is a website I had done a couple of things for years and years prior, and I said, hey, would you guys like a podcast? And fortunately for me, they took me up on it. So I was doing what was at the time the podcast for theforce.net.
Right.
I'm horrible at naming things. So I did that for a little while. I got a little bit overwhelmed with it. We didn't have things like Skype back then where people could do calls like what we're doing right now in 3 different locations and have it sound and feel like we're all in the same room together. So I took a step back from it and went back to podcasting locally with other friends that I had doing random chatter stuff. Jason and another person started up that show again and titled it The Force Cast, which was a much better title for it. And then the person who started with Jason, I forget the guy's name.
Pete Nadel, was replaced by, what was his name? Was it? Pete Nadel, I think.
Yes. Thank you, Pete. It was Jason and Pete. And then Pete left and Jimmy Mack came in and filled in. And, you know, they had the Force Cast for years and years. They left right about the time the new Star Wars movie was announced. And so I hopped back over and said, hey, if you need someone to fill in, I'm definitely up for it. So that's how I got back onto the Force Cast again. But even in between that time, from 2005 to about 2012 or 2013, we had been doing podcasting over at randomchatter.com, which is actually how I met the two of you.
Right. Cool. And Lou, how did you get hooked up with Eric and Random Chatter and the podcasting?
Yeah, actually, I started out as a fan. I think Eric's podcasts are probably some of the first I had listened to and stuck with it amazingly after that. But I was into Lost and I heard you guys doing Lost Chatter, and I kept kind of bugging Eric about, hey, can I help? Can I do something? Can I be involved somehow? And he said, hey, we need a fill-in host for Lost Chatter. And you guys got me on the show, and we talked about Lost for a couple of years until the series ran out. And mm-hmm. I think we did Random Chatter after that for a couple of years. And I was hooked. You know, it's a lot of fun to talk about the things that we're passionate about and dig in deeper into some of the stuff, whether it be movies, technology stuff, or just entertainment stuff in general. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah. I guess my first introduction to podcasting was because when I created Flickchart along with my partner Jeremy Thompson, we were just in beta and we were just giving out invitations to a select few people to try out the service because we were a little bit worried about just letting the floodgates open and letting people come in and tear up the place, so to speak. And somehow, I don't know how, Eric, but you had ended up contacting me and asking us to appear on Random Chatter as a guest to talk about Flickchart. And you were the first podcast anywhere to do that, to find us and to ask us to be a part of it. So we jumped on Random Chatter and did a show, and then we've kind of just been internet friends ever since. And we've like you guys have said, we got on Lost Chatter when Lost was in its heyday, and we were talking about it every week and really getting into some great discussions about the show and trying desperately to figure out where it was headed. And it was an interesting time to do that and to have something really focused to talk about. So I'm glad that that we might have a chance here, to the three of us, to get back together and to talk about movies again and to try to bring back Flick Fights, which was a really successful podcast for us for a number of years, and see what we can do with it and see where we can take it for the future.
Well, you know, you mentioned Lost Chatter, and one of the things I always loved about Lost Chatter, in hindsight, it's probably my favorite podcast I've ever done, because each week we would go through each episode of Lost and there was so much going on beneath the surface, and you really had to stop and think about what was going on in the show as an audience member, and talking about what was going on back and forth and what the different things that we were observing might mean, and then where things might be going in the future. That was a lot of fun, and that's the type of thing that you don't really get to do when you're podcasting about a lot of other content, whether it be other television shows or a particular movie or even, you know, entertainment news, things like that. So for me, doing a podcast on Flickchart kind of brings some of that back, because it's always fun, in my opinion, to take two different things that are similar yet different and try to analyze, what are the pros and cons of each one and which one is more important to you than the other. Even if they're both things that you're passionate about, there's still so much thought and consideration that goes into that. And then not only that on an individual level, but then when you're discussing that with two other people who also have their own perspectives on that, I think that's a lot of fun. So for me, there's a lot about doing this type of a show that kind of has a similar feel to what it was like doing Lost Chatter.
All right. Well, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up this first episode here. And for all the listeners out there, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at FlickFights. And if you want to send us an email, you can send it to flickfights@flickchart.com. Let us know what you think about the show. And if you want any particular focus of the show, or you have some ideas that maybe we haven't thought of that you would want to see added to the show in the future, please do give us your feedback and let us know. And of course, if you've never been to FlickChart, go to www.flickchart.com. Sign up for an account. It's free, and you can start ranking your movies and creating a list of all your favorite movies of all time and start filtering it and looking at all the movies that you've ever seen in a myriad of different ways and experience film in a way that you haven't previously. So thank you, and we'll be talking to you soon.